Welcome to the RSP cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and we're going to welcome back Dwayne McFarland to the show. Dwayne, we're heading into week four, and thought it would be a good time to bring you back on so that we could talk a little bit about what we've seen thus far with about three to four teams that have been really interesting in a variety of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like I was just on with you yesterday, but I think I was just looking. I think it's been like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, man, it has.
Things aren't flying when the season's going.
It really does. It really does. I mean, it's kind of funny. It's like the first week comes and you get overloaded with information, and the next thing you know, you look up and it's week 16. So, you know, with that in mind, we picked out four teams before this show that we felt like had some of the more juicy, you know, tidbits about how they're doing, both good and bad. And those teams that we're going to cover today are the Ravens, the Cardinals, the Browns, and the Vikings. So stay tuned for that. You know, to begin with, let's take a look at the Cardinals. Let's just start with them. You know, certainly a lot of people are interested in Kyler Murray and the Cliff Kingsbury offense. We covered them in our projection series. What have you noticed thus far about the Cardinals in terms of, you know, what you've either seen on the field or as well as how the type of data that you're tracking that gives you some, you know, that will give our listeners some insights about the Cardinals and where they're heading?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing is something that we expected, and it is coming to fruition, which is, you know, the pace of play. So if you look at the Cardinals, their plays per minute, which is something I like to track, you know, over the first three games in week one, 2.68 plays per minute, which was the tops in the league. Like, to give you an example, I think the next closest team was at a 2.4, which is also really high. But then once you go past that, like, you get down to most teams that are, you would consider to be moving pretty fast, Matt, to be, you know, just above a two, like a 2.2, a 2.15. So, I mean, they're in another stratosphere, really. And then that continued along, you know, in week two, they were at a 2.4. And it's always, for me, what I like to look at, Matt, is, you know, what's the context of the game as well. So if you think about week one, they were trailing that whole game. They were playing Detroit. And then towards the end of the third quarter, they started to make a push. Fourth quarter, they got it to a tie. They took it to overtime. So that game ended in a tie, but really they were trailing much of the game. So 2.68 plays, you know, per minute, that was their highest mark of the season. But in week two, you know, the game was closer, further along, and they lose by, you know, they kept the game with the Ravens a little closer than what people, you know, would have thought, but they weren't down huge early on like they were with the Lions. You know, they ended up losing the game by 6 points. They ran 2.41 plays per minute, which was still top three in the league for the week. And then last week, 2.58 plays, you know, per minute. So they're averaging 2.57 on the season, which is the top in the NFL. So Kingsbury truly is bringing that pace, you know, to fruition, you know, the things that we heard and, you know, talked about all the things that he did, you know, at Texas Tech with the air raid. And, you know, he's really holding true to those things. You know, this last game, they lost by 18 points. So some of this, when teams trail, they're going to try to run more plays, right? It makes sense. So even if you think about the Ravens, you know, in week one, they ran 1.8 plays, you know, per minute because they were leading. But if you look at week three, in a game they trailed to the Chiefs, they ran 2.38 plays per minute. So some of this is contextual based on the game. But whenever you look at the Cardinals, I mean, just across the board, they're running a lot of plays. I don't see how they don't run the most plays in the league this year, and it may be by a decent margin. The other thing, you know, that's, you know, really I'm noticing, Matt, you know, and I'll step back here and let you talk a little bit about what you're seeing with the players. But really this, you know, this offense, they've funneled it down. You know, early on, we didn't know who all the receivers were going to be. I remember when we talked about this team, we didn't know what Isabella's role was going to be. I don't even think Akeem Butler had been hurt yet, because I think we talked about this team pretty early on. We knew, yeah, Keyshawn Johnson was getting some buzz. You know, then we saw some preseason, you know, looks where Demir Byrd was out there early, but we just didn't quite know how this was going to shake out. And I mean, they've really just settled in on, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, playing 94% of the snaps. But the key thing here I'm going to talk about mostly with receivers, Matt, is, you know, the number of routes they're running per dropback. So that tells you how often is a receiver on the field when the team is passing. And that's what you care about the most for, you know, your receiving options. But it's really Larry Fitzgerald at 95% for the year, Christian Kirk at 92%, and Damir Bird at 92%. And you have Keyshawn Johnson, you know, he's next at 58%. With Michael Crabtree leaving, I expect to see that, you know, move up, because Keyshawn was at 83% in week one. And really the tight ends aren't getting a lot of work, Matt. So that's the other thing. We're seeing a ton of 10 personnel. You know, I think there was a stat that was thrown out there after week one. It showed, you know, all the plays that the Cardinals ran from 10, and it was more than the rest of all of the league combined. And you're seeing that trend, you know, continue on. But what's really interesting here, Matt, is Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk, the way they're being used. Remember in the preseason, we were a little concerned, is Larry Fitzgerald going to be moved outside? Is that potentially going to hinder his catch rate? You know, is that going to be a struggle with a young quarterback like Kyler Murray? Well, guess what? They're playing him inside all the time. His slot percentages, 95, 93, and 94%. And guess who else is right next to him? It's Christian Kirk at 89, 80, and 83%. So they're taking their two top weapons and they're working them from the slot, which I think is really interesting, because that's what we were concerned about. So I'm interested to see what it is that, you know, that that you're seeing. These are the trends I'm seeing in the data. You know, running a lot of plays, keeping their best players inside. Obviously, David Johnson's very involved. The results haven't ultimately been there on the scoreboard, but it seems like they're really trying to fill their way through, you know, what's the best way to attack defenses. And they've got some of that figured out, but they need some other players to step up.
Yeah. And let's start with the inside receiver part, them both playing inside in the slot. And I think that's why they're playing 10 personnel, so that they can get that. It's harder for that's getting their best players on the field and making it harder for them to be defended. Because one of the trends that we're seeing in the NFL over the past, I'd say, 3 to 5 years is the rise of, as you've noted in the RSP site, the rise of the slot receiver. But a lot of college offenses use slot, their best receivers, put them in the slot, and then have them run on routes towards the boundary. And then they're still being targeted as a slot receiver, but they're getting the benefit of having more room to the boundary, which makes the throw easier for the quarterback and makes the route easier for the receiver to be able to have more room to operate, as opposed to working on the perimeter and running a corner route, or running an out route or a fade route from the perimeter. It's, you know, there's less room to work with from the beginning. But if you're in the slot, you can work from one side or the other, and you create some issues for the coverage where they don't have the benefit of the boundary to help them in their defense of the receiver. And we're seeing that with a number of teams, but it's looking at the numbers that you're talking about here, it's very clear that the Cardinals are using that to the maximum extent by going with 10 personnel. And when we move over to the tempo, I've certainly seen that the tempo has helped the Cardinals, and they've talked anecdotally about how they've seen opposing secondaries really out of breath. I've seen some plays where they've run a successful play, you know, against the Ravens, and they hurried up and then ran another play where they had Fitzgerald on that kind of crosser wheel type of route where he crosses the field on a shallow crosser and then turns upfield up the seam to be able to work behind the zone coverage and just work past them and make a big play. And they ran two plays like that in a row where they hurried up. And so I think this offense has been very good between the 20s, you know. But where this offense really breaks down for me right now has been inside the 20s, whether they're backed up in their own area or in the red zone. And I think some of that has to do with spreading the field. I think that when you spread the field in a compressed area, it makes it easier for the defense to defend. And you can't use, you already have defenders spread out. So you're not going to have the benefit of, you know, of having guys on the inside working to the outside, unless you have slower developing plays. And because the offensive line isn't that strong, and you have a slower developing play, that's more likely for there to be pressure. And Kyler Murray has really not, this is one of his weak areas in his game thus far, has been mismanagement of red zone decision making. He's really mismanaged the red zone a lot. Inside the 20, you see him under pressure and he doesn't throw the ball away. He ends up rolling out and trying to hold on to the ball to see if he can find somebody open or run. And then when he gets pinned to the boundary, he ends up stepping out of bounds. And even though they're minor losses in a compressed area of the field, it's a big deal to lose 2 to 3 yards when you're inside the 5. you know, instead of throwing it out of bounds and still being second and goal from the three, now you're at, you know, second and goal from the six, you know, and that's a big deal. So it changes how you would operate. And I think that, you know, for the first three games, this, you know, I've heard people say narrative wise that he's gotten better each week, and maybe there's some things statistically that will show that. But from a decision-making standpoint, in the most important area of the field, he hasn't gotten better. He hasn't changed. He keeps making the same mistakes. And so I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about inside his own 20, because you also see mistakes there where, you know, he's gotten a little better there. You know, the first game he threw an interception. You didn't see him make those kinds of mistakes in the second and third games. But they still look like the adjustments that he has to make with the line and any type of pre-snap adjustments, it's slow to come. They seem to be under the gun and very close to the, you know, having issues in terms of communication with that. And then the third thing that really concerns me about this team is you mentioned David Johnson, and certainly as a receiver, they've used him more, but the work that they have to do to get him into an open crease as just a, you know, as a running back, as a runner, is it seems like they have to do a lot of work for that. You know, when they have a traditional run play where it's basically man on man, no misdirection, just the strength of the lineman against the lineman, he's not getting creases. Now, if they do any type of misdirection where they may have run, like I showed this on Twitter this week, where they run maybe a speed option play, where you have the potential for them to give the ball to, give the ball to a receiver working in one direction, working in the opposite direction of the, like the zone read look that Kyler Murray is doing with David Johnson, you know, that's freezing defenses. And so more misdirection would probably be helpful for this run game, especially if you're not going to have tight ends on the field, even though their tight ends aren't really blockers anyhow. I mean, Charles Clay can be a blocker, but I don't think he's getting used as much as, some of the other guys on the squad. And so when I look at this as a whole, I don't even know if he's really a great inline blocker. He was more of a fullback, H-back type. So, and it also just takes up a space of one of the receivers that they'd like to have on the field in the position that they're at. So this team, to me, right now you look at David Johnson, and if you just extrapolate his game simply, you know, just do a blunt extrapolation of what's going on, he's in line for about 700 yards and 1,100 yards total, in total yards, but he's also in line for 16 touchdowns. So, you know, neither of those are likely to be the case, but I bet more on his yardage being closer to that extrapolation than his touchdowns, which is bad news in terms of his productivity and the run game's productivity, in addition to the fact that they're always behind because their defense isn't that great, and they may get a shot in the arm with Patrick Peterson, but I don't think Patrick Peterson's going to help DJ Swearinger stop tight ends who are just feasting on him, pretty much week after week. So I see this team as a productive yardage producer, but I think the areas that define quarterbacks in the NFL are the red area, and, you know, Kyler Murray's good when you don't pressure him. He's good when he has wide open space to run, but when he's forced to move to his left or his right, he gets pinned in more often than you'd expect. He gets run down more often than you would expect. And on top of that, when he's forced to move in the pocket, if he can just do a simple climb and throw, good news. He's awesome. You know, and he's making some really nice throws and decisions when he has time. But it's the tough stuff, you know, and we'll get into that more with other quarterbacks, but I'll just end it like this, which is, you know, everyone's Daniel Jones is the flavor of the week right now because he had a terrific game, and he really did. But we have to remember Marcus Mariota had a terrific debut. I think Jameis Winston was also in that terrific debut. They played each other that first week of the season when they had their rookie debuts, and he wasn't bad. It's easy to generate excitement about quarterbacks in their first game, their first few games. Then defenses, people say, well, it's such a cliche to say defenses figure them out. Well, they do. They figure out what their weaknesses are, and now they ask them to do things that they don't normally do as well. And until we see those quarterbacks face adversity that is designed specifically for them, it's hard to pin down really what their trajectory is going to be like. So I'm more cautiously optimistic with Kyler Murray at this point and with this offense.
Yeah, just a couple of quick things, you know, that kind of came to my mind, you know, looking at some of the data while you were talking about Murray. What's interesting, you know, is, you know, his pressure rate is only 31% according to Pro Football Focus. So that's the amount of times, you know, that he's actually under pressure whenever he drops back, which is in the bottom third of the league. So not terrible. Now, part of that is they seem to be getting the ball out of his hand pretty quick. You know, his average time to throw is 2.61 seconds, you know, so on the longer side of things would be slightly above a three. The really quick side of things, you know, just as a reference point is like 2.2, 2.3, but he's right in that, you know, sweet spot around, you know, 2.5, 2.6. So he's getting the ball out fairly quick, which a lot of times for rookies isn't the case. You know, they're taking longer to process. So it seems like they are building the offense to allow him to do that. What's interesting that goes hand in hand with that is week one, he had a ton of deep shots, but they've gone down every week. And if you look at his average depth of target, you know, over the course of, you know, these first few weeks during the season, you know, that's something that's dropped each week. And I think last week hit a low. It was down like around a 5.9 or something. I don't have it right in front of me. So it seems like, you know, and some of that could be based on opponent, but they do seem to be, you know, adjusting the offense some, you know, because I expected, honestly, for him to be under pressure even more, giving their offensive line and him being a rookie. But here's the bad part. Even though he's only being pressured, you know, he's being pressured in the bottom 33% versus other teams and other quarterbacks, he's the third most sacked guy on pressures. So he's being sacked 33% of the time. You don't want to see those two numbers that close. You know, when you get pressure, you want to see the quarterback's, you know, sack percentage. You typically want to be lower than, you know, the pressure percentage. But, you know, his is right at a 33% on sacks, which, like I said, is the third highest in the league. So, you know, I think that kind of goes back to some of the things that you were just talking through as far as, you know, if he can just climb a clean pocket, that's one thing. But if he's asked to do more, it seems like, and I've seen some plays even that you've posted on Twitter where it seems like he's running into the trouble, you know, based on his footwork versus, you know, finding a way to escape the trouble. So obviously, yeah, I think he's got a lot, you know, to go there. If I think back to the way we projected this offense, you know, to start, you know, the season, Matt, honestly, I feel like we were pretty close on this one. You know, we saw it as an offense that would, you know, probably run up a lot of plays. You know, they're going to get some yardage, but we thought efficiency would be an issue. And I think that's what we're seeing. Efficiency overall, you know, his yards per attempt are not high. You know, if you look at the offense on a whole, David Johnson's only averaged 3.7 yards per carry. And like you mentioned, just having problems overall in the red zone. So it's an offense that, by brunt force, is giving, you know, some volume to certain guys. Like on this team, Matt, if you get 20% target share, you know, as a receiver, it's like getting 30% on the Packers, you know, because they run so many plays. You know, you're going to get 7 or 8 targets on 20%. Whereas, you know, Marquise Valdez-Scantling this last week for the Packers had like 31%. You know, I want to say he had 8 or 9 targets. So somewhere right around there. So, I mean, there is volume, you know, to go around for some of these players, but efficiency is a killer.
Yeah, and just to follow end this on a note where you talked about how teams or how they're playing and how they're adjusting. They're adjusting to how the defenses are playing them, because if the Panthers game, what I noticed a lot was that the linebackers on certain down and distances more often than what I saw with the other two teams was they dropped back pretty far. So like they put 7 into coverage and dropped them like well behind the first down marker and said, you're not going to attack us deep. We're going to force you to be patient, Kyler Murray, and actually take routes that break open quickly and early. And Murray wouldn't do it because he was looking deep. And then he'd hesitate when he saw the first open read and he'd go somewhere else to look. And then it was too late because the 4-man pressure that was coming was able to get to him. So what you're seeing is that I think what you're going to see is they're going to make Kyler Murray prove that he can be patient and throw the short and intermediate balls and the quick, you know, first read open breaking player. And they're going to count on the fact that he's not mature enough yet to do that consistently enough. And that they're going to be able to get pressure with four men. So that's one of the things that I think is going to be interesting about the development of this. And yeah, I mean, at this point I would say, I would just like to know from your point of view, do you think if, my projection was kind of like Kyler Murray and is going to be good for part of the season and bad for another part of the season. Right now, from a raw number standpoint, it seems like he's pretty good. But if you were to project him down or up for the rest of the year, what would you lean towards?
Yeah, based on what I'm seeing, here are the positives. He's not throwing, a ton of interceptions. He has thrown some. He's got three. But one of the things you worry about with rookies, Matt, is the guy that's going to come out and throw 20 interceptions and only throw 10 touchdowns. So he seems to be managing, the game, to some extent. He's, like you said, he's definitely got flaws, but the raw volume itself, is probably going to be there just because of what we talked about early on, which is the pace. So I project him as even as to where we started this preseason, because I remember, there were a lot of folks in the industry coming out and saying Kyler Murray is going to be, he's going to be a top five quarterback, in the league this year, as far as yards and touchdowns because of this offense. And I remember us talking through some of the, but he's going to have some bumps along the road. And I think that's, what we're seeing. I would say overall, though, he's outperformed my expectations, but not by enough to make me want to upgrade him, as being, a top 12 quarterback in the league. I think he's sitting right there on the edge of that. I think to your point, we're going to see, he's going to eventually have a week, Matt, where everything's going to click. He's going to hit the big plays. He's going to be able to burn a defense that's playing him a certain way. He's going to come up with, some touchdowns on the ground. He's going to have a 100-yard rushing day too. That's probably going to happen. This last week we saw him have 69 yards rushing, which before he had only had 13 and 4. So he's going to have some weeks where I think he wows everyone. But then I think he's going to have these weeks, where we're also sitting there going, overall the stats don't look bad, but they also don't add up to a ton. Whenever you think about touchdown passes, it's like, okay, the yards are there, but what's he really doing to help, this offense score? So I put him as, he's just holding steady, versus where I had him, versus the preseason. I have him there. I guess if you really pin me down on it, I would say that I'm slightly more optimistic on him, just because he hasn't, totally just caved, under the pressure to this point.
Okay. So let's go on to the Ravens and talk about their play. Obviously, Lamar Jackson has performed extremely well. Hollywood Brown has performed extremely well for a rookie. We haven't really heard much of a peep from Miles Boykin other than a scramble, a reception on a scramble drill. Mark Andrews has been huge. Certainly the running game has been awesome. So what do you make of the Ravens? What are some things that you're noting?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably my favorite offense to watch right now. I mean, just because of the bind that they're putting defenses in, they come out in so many different formations. They use so many different personnel groupings, they're mixing and matching, their players quite often. So they've got three tight ends that, can play anywhere from 40 to 50% of the snaps each. Like you said, Andrews is typically the guy, if you're talking about the passing option, but then you've got Nick Boyle and Hayden Hurst, who they're not getting a ton of love, but each of them have each had a game where they at least got 12% of the targets. So they can distribute this ball all over the place. And the running ability of Lamar Jackson, along with what Mark Ingram can do, and as well as, Gus Edwards, I'm just seeing teams really put in a bind. The big plays that I've seen, from Lamar Jackson, the majority of them come in the areas that you and I talked about, this preseason. And I want to get your thoughts on how he's progressing in some of his other areas. But what I'm seeing is, Mark Andrews and a lot of these, and Marquise Hollywood Brown, I mean, they're wide open in the middle of the field. I mean, they're very open. They're more open than what you often see, Matt. I mean, now you can kind of discount the Dolphins in week one, but they've continued. And you even said this, I think, on Twitter. I think you said, the Ravens are probably going to continue to do this to people more than what people may think. This isn't just all the Dolphins. And I think that's what we've continued to see. The Chiefs played them a little better this last week because they got up on them, you know, so it took away some of that element of surprise of the running game, which is honestly how they did most of their scoring. You know, Mark Ingram had 3 touchdown runs, so it wasn't the running game wasn't effective, but they had to go away from it more and they had to pass the ball much more. But these throws, you know, between the numbers, you know, to Andrews and to, you know, Marquise Brown, I mean, they fit just right with what Lamar Jackson does. And whenever they're concerned about the run, I'm sitting here trying to figure out, you know, how do defenses stop him? But what I would like to know, you know, is what are you seeing from Lamar Jackson? Because we had talked about, I had gone back and charted every throw from Lamar Jackson last year. And then I charted everything Lamar Jackson had done, you know, this preseason. I haven't had a chance to chart his throws, you know, since the season started. But how does he look, you know, now, Matt, with some of the things where I had seen some issues, which were throwing outside the numbers, A, deep, and then B, on timing type throws, intermediate. So, you know, saying 15 yards and above, you know, on timing type stuff, you know, out routes, you know, even corner routes to some extent. You know, he really struggled with those type of throws. But if you gave him the throws like the crossers, the posts, the drags, you know, even slant routes, he was really good on those last season. So what are you seeing right now as far as his growth in those areas?
Yeah, Dwayne, I think that the deep ball has incrementally gotten better, even though I don't know if the stats would support that. When you hit the throw that he did against the Cardinals with Hollywood Brown, that was a big-time throw, and it was a very weighty throw in terms of the context of the direction of this quarterback, this receiver, and this offense overall, that the team would trust him enough on a fourth down to go deep like that with late in the game and with the game really in the balance still. And that was, you know, it was a pinpoint pass. There was a pass last week where the ball literally just went through Miles Boykin's hands in the red zone, in the end zone for what could have been a touchdown against tight coverage. So there are some plays that are there that should have been made, and they were the product of pinpoint throws. So I think he's getting a little better on the outside in the deep routes in terms of, if I were charting his plays, I would say that he's gotten better. In terms of the timing routes, I haven't seen a lot of them, and I haven't seen any notable results there. But I think overall what we're seeing with Lamar Jackson is exactly what, you know, you and I've talked about, what I've talked about with Michael Crawford at the Russell Street Report, who's, you know, that covers the Ravens, you know, back in whether it was February or March when we talked about this, which is that the Lamar Jackson finally had an off season to not only, you know, learn the offense and practice with the first team, but also work with receivers so that he had rapport with them. And I think that the plays in the middle of the field have just become that much sharper because of the fact of the work that he's done, even with some of these guys being rather new or losing some of the older, you know, some of the more established talents or benching some of the more established talents. Willie Snead really hasn't been a factor at all, whereas last year he was, you know, one of the primary receivers in this offense. So I think that that's part of it. And he's also making some, you know, I would look at it this way. I mean, I could look at it this way and say, I'm not seeing it much different from what I saw at Louisville. I'm just seeing slightly better, you know, and a lot of people would say, well, that doesn't sound very good. But if you're one of the people who really didn't have a high estimation of Lamar Jackson, then you probably weren't watching the Louisville tape very well. I mean, that's just my opinion. I mean, I know there's some people who would disagree with that, but I think that if you watch it closely enough and you're watching to project to the NFL game, he was making these types of throws over the middle in the tight windows, anticipating really well, showing the strong pocket presence. And the problem last year was maybe he was slightly off target, you know, with some of his receivers over the middle, or they dropped some passes, or there's some difficult plays where he was a little off target, but it had more to do with the depth of the route or the break or the communication as opposed to accuracy, and people were mistaking that, which is easy to mistake when you're watching the tape, but sometimes you may not understand that the issue of where the pass looked inaccurate had more to do with timing and with route depth than it did actually with the placement. So you know, overall, this is an exciting team. I love how they use condensed sets and then spread the field out of those condensed sets. So they're one of those teams that does a really good job of packing it in, looking like they're going to run, and you have to honor it because of Lamar Jackson. Like, you have to be on guard with him running, and if you're not, he's going to take it outside. And sometimes they run from the condensed set and have him run outside from the backside of the formation, and he's just getting easy yards. Like, nobody's getting a chance to hit him. And last year it was kind of the same case. I mean, every once in a while he'd make a run where people go, oh, wow, don't take that kind of contact. But more often than not, and more than most quarterbacks, you see him get gains of 8, 15, 18 yards, and nobody touching him. You know, he just runs out of bounds like it was nothing. And it's like, well, he can't run the ball so much because he's going to take a lot of punishment. And I kept thinking this whole summer, it's like, no, you know, the way he runs the ball, if he gets 100 yards in a game, I have to think that probably 55 to 70 of those yards are the easiest yards you may have ever seen a quarterback get,
right,
in terms of, you know, not being touched. So as long as he's healthy and creates this run pass bind, and along with Ingram and Gus Edwards, you know, I don't see, you know, the biggest issue for this team is whether or not they face a juggernaut offense like the Chiefs, or if the Patriots really get on track, or the Chargers really get on track, and they have to face a really good offense that their defense can't stop, and they have to play from behind a little bit more, which means that their offense has to play a perfect game down the stretch for them to stay in the game or to win the game. And I think that that's kind of where what we saw with the Chiefs this past weekend.
Yeah, like I said, you know, and I think, you know, just hearing you talk about it makes me love this team even more. But they just seem to really be smart about what they're doing. I agree with you that the teams that can give them problem is when they get ahead, because then I think they also lose some of their, you know, element of surprise, right, by having to move to a more heavy passing game versus a balance, because they're really set up to make big plays, right? They don't really want to pass the ball 60% of the time. They will. What they would rather do is throw the ball 50% of the time, maybe 55% of the time, but do it in a way where it's just creating huge chunk plays. And so I think when the Chiefs got out in front of them and then were able to play, you know, to change up their coverages and anticipate, you know, and not have to respect the run as much, because, you know, they could allow them, you know, basically invite them to run the ball to some extent. You know, I think that is what hurt, you know, the Ravens this past week. But what's interesting is just hearing, I don't know if you, did you listen to Harbaugh's press conference where he actually talked about analytics?
Yes.
It was pretty cool. I mean, the guy, you can tell, has a decent understanding. He talks about how he doesn't always agree with the analytics. In fact, he'll often go against them, you know, and how the analytic guys will say that he doesn't use them near enough. But, you know, it's like they're working through their balance. He talked about, hey, in this situation, though, it was very clear that going for two, you know, is what we should do in those scenarios, because here are all the ways it helps you. So it was cool to hear a coach get up and talk about that. And I think if you look, Matt, at the history over, I think, the last 10 years, the best way to get your yards per attempt up is to attack the middle part of the field. And so I think there's something strategic about what they're doing. I mean, if you look at Lamar Jackson, listen to what he's done down the middle of the field, Matt. So over 20 yards down the middle. And so when I say down the middle, it's just between the numbers. He's 4 of 7 for 183 yards and 2 touchdowns. Then when you go to the next layer down, you know, the 10 to 19 yard range, so intermediate, he's 7 of 12 for 132 yards, 1 touchdown, no interception. And then if you look just in the 0 to 9 yards, he's 18 of 25 for 189 yards and 3 touchdowns. I mean, so they're killing it, you know, down the middle of the field. And, you know, they're maximizing big plays from the middle of the field. Outside the numbers and deeper, they're not as efficient. But what I will say, you know, I was able to pull up a view of this, you know, in that intermediate and short range, he's actually pretty good, Matt. Outside the numbers, he's if you look at, you know, both left and right now in the 10 to 19 yard range, he is 3 of 5 for 60 yards and a touchdown. You know, if you look at him in that 0 to 9 yard range, you know, to the right is 9 of 9 for 63 yards. To the left, he's 6 of 7 for 54 yards. Not creating big scoring plays there, but I mean, his accuracy, you know, I haven't watched all the throws, but from a statistical standpoint, you know, it looks like, you know, he's doing some nice things in those areas.
Yeah. And when you talk about the middle of the field, well, it's kind of obvious that they would do the middle of the field if they want to be a run team, because when you can run the ball, you're forcing linebackers and safeties to play tighter to the line, and you're going to be able to work behind them. And so you have that, you know, you have that element with the respecting the quarterback. You have to stay on him, and that, and if you can just get rid of the ball fairly quickly into the middle of the field, it's going to be a little bit of an easier time there. So, I mean, yeah, this is a, you know, this is a fun, fun team, and it's, you know, I really love watching the Ravens.
Yeah, I love everything they're doing. One last note, 34% of their attempts, which is 6th in the league right now, 33.6% of attempts, according to Pro Football Focus, are play action. So, like you said, you know, you're a run team, you're using that run to set up those things, and they're creating those chunk plays. So, yeah, they're a blast to watch. They're doing a lot of things right.
Yeah, I think they're really, honestly, they're just a, they're a game-changing defender away from being the Super Bowl champion. I think that's kind of, because this team, like you said, it needs to play perfect football on offense right now, mainly because the defense can't, the defense is very good. It's, they're, what I've always loved about the Ravens is they're, you know, they still have the soul of the Cleveland Browns I grew up with, which is a hard hitting, aggressive defense that can cover, and, you know, and a physical run game with an intelligent passer. And I think that you are seeing that manifest, but what they need is kind of what the Seahawks had. They need someone who can really rush, not only just rush the passer, but, you know, a huge playmaker linebacker, I think, who can really cover sideline to sideline. And if they could get, like, maybe it's two players, one or two more players who can really do damage in that defense and make them dominant, this team could have a 3 or 4 year championship window, as long as it stays healthy. Moving on from the old Cleveland Browns, let's take a look at the new Cleveland Browns, and talk a little bit about this team that has been underachieving, at least relative to the massive expectations that the media has had, and many of us have had, you know, regarding Baker Mayfield, who had a strong start since the Jets game last year. And there was a record breaking pace on some levels. And then you have Nick Chubb and how well he played down the stretch. And then they add, Odell Beckham, but, you know, they added Odell Beckham. They lost Kevin Zeitler. They gained Olivier Vernon. The net gain to me is a net loss along that offensive line. And it seems like this team has been really bent on being aggressive downfield to the point that there doesn't seem like there's a cohesive plan with this offense, or it's a fairly predictable offense in a lot of ways. And then you have Mayfield and his play, which we'll get into as well. But what are you noticing from the data and from your eye with the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I think a lot of things you just said there are what's jumping out in the data, you know, and I think it all starts, you know, with Baker Mayfield. And if you look at what he's doing right now, you know, Matt, he's playing really bad under pressure. And he also, I think I've even seen some of the stuff on Twitter where you've, you know, kind of called out where he's creating some of these scenarios on his own. He seems to be lost, right? And some of it does seem to stem from what you're talking about of always looking for the deep shot, which to some extent makes, you know, sense, because this is Freddie Kitchens, who comes from the Bruce Arians, you know, tree of coaching. You know, he's been with several other guys, but that's who he spent the most time with. And what does Arians do? He likes to have that vertical offense. He likes three receivers in the route, you know, all the time, you know, and two or three of those are usually working deep, one guy working intermediate. Then you might have somebody, you know, chipping and then working out of the backfield into the flat, that kind of a thing. And that seems to be, you know, the kind of offense, you know, that they are running. But right now, Baker, you know, his quarterback rating when under pressure, you know, Matt, is 28.3. So that is fourth worst. Actually, hang on, let me resort this right here. That's third worst in the league. Only Eli Manning and Mitchell, your favorite, Mitch Trubisky, Matt, if you want to give him an applause real quick, I can pause. But Baker Mayfield is the, you know, third from the bottom. You know, Eli and Trubisky have been, you know, the worst at a quarterback rating of 15. Sorry, Eli. And then Mitch at 20. And then Baker's at a 28. You know, he's been under pressure more than what we had seen in the past. You know, 38% of the time that he drops back, he's actually under pressure. So that's a bad combination. If you're under pressure, you know, you're one of the quarterbacks that's under pressure, you know, the top 10 most in the league, and then your quarterback rating is the bottom third, you really don't want those two stats, you know, those two stats don't mix well together. So he's under pressure often and he doesn't perform well under it. So that seems to be, you know, a really, you know, big, you know, problem for him. You know, as far as whenever he's kept clean though, if you look at what Baker's been able to do, I mean, it's been, you know, a little bit better, but even in those scenarios, you know, Matt, he hasn't been able to hit a lot of the big plays that we had seen. You know, I don't think things have quite come to fruition with Odell Beckham the way they had wanted so far. And some of that could be them just working through that. But even in these situations where, you know, he's not under any kind of pressure, you know, he's thrown three touchdowns and three interceptions. You know, the guys that are at the top of the league, they're not doing that. Dak Prescott, when he's not under pressure, 9 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Lamar Jackson, who we just talked about, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. You know, so Patrick Mahomes, 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. So Baker really, even when kept clean, you know, those guys are all putting up 125, 150 quarterback, you know, 145 quarterback ratings. He's sitting at a 90, which you think, oh, 90 is good. No, not for whenever you're kept clean. That's not a good number. So he's really not performing well in any way, whenever he's kept clean, whenever he's under pressure. They all seem to be problems. And again, it seems to stem back to what you were talking about. It feels like they're trying to force things. It doesn't feel like when I watch the games, and I haven't charted a bunch of plays yet, you know, I haven't had time, but just when I go back, I have rewatched their games. And when I watch it, it just doesn't, there's no continuity to it. You know, I don't feel like anything's setting up, you know, the next thing. I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong here, you jump in, but I just feel like I'm like, wow, okay, they just kind of called that play. It was like Freddie Kitchens looked down at a sheet and said, well, I'll just point here and I'm going to call this play. I don't feel like there's a lot of, and I may be missing it, but I don't feel like there's a lot of layering, right? That, hey, let's do this and let's put ourselves in a good situation here and then let's wrap back around and give a counterpunch this way. None of those things seem to be happening right now whenever I watch this team.
Yeah, this is the offense. The offensive scheme would best be called, let's throw it up on the wall and see if it sticks. And I think that that's basically what's happening here. And you know, I could, you know, there's things I would nitpick is say you have Nick Chubb, who is probably one of the best interior runners in the league, who if you get him going is a breakaway threat, as well as a guy who will close down a defense, and you're running him from shotgun, yeah, like all the time. You're not even running him from pistol. You're running him from shotgun. You're forcing him to go east-west, which he's good at, but that's not what he's great at. Like, put him where he's great. And you have a team, you know, before, you know, Baker threw the hospital ball to Njoku and put him out for the year, you could have used a two tight end set pretty well. And, you know, I know Njoku isn't a great blocker, but I would have loved to seen them run downhill a little bit more, even with two tight ends, and maybe use one as a lead blocker a little bit more and give him a chance to be a power back. And to me, that's where Cleveland's trying to get a little too trendy. And if I'm going to give you motivation about this is this. First is that dating back to 2015, I had Gene Clemens with Football Game Plan on the Rookie Scouting Portfolio YouTube film room series. And we profiled Baker Mayfield and Trevon Boykin of TCU back to back. And one of the things that we noted about Baker Mayfield back in 2015 was how often he liked rolling to his right outside the pocket, inviting pressure and not making good plays, and how uncomfortable he was in the pocket when he had to maneuver a little bit in it, and that the longer the play took, you know, the more boom bust he was as a player. And that never changed in his game. It got a little bit better in Oklahoma's offense only because the offense was so good that they were being able to let him get rid of the ball in less than 2.5 seconds, which Chris Collinsworth talked about on Sunday, that he was 2 for 12 at one point on Sunday. when he had to throw for, he had to wait for more than 2.5 seconds to get rid of the ball. And so I think defenses, now that they understand this, or at least understand some elements of that offense, don't fall for the stuff as early. And then also they've changed this offense some to the point that maybe they're not going to some of the things that they should as frequently, because some of the plays that have worked were some of those old OU type of plays. And I haven't really noticed it as often, but the bigger point here is that where Mayfield can improve, because we can point fingers at the offense, we can point fingers at the offensive line, and they certainly are deserving of that kind of critiquing. But Baker Mayfield has never changed his ability to. He's had two issues that are very big. One is that if you get pressure off the edges and you close off the edges and force him to maneuver the pocket, he's not accurate. He waits too long on throws. He tries to work outside. He's either going to take sacks, throw in completions, or, you know, wind up and have a bad outcome. Or if you can force him outside, if you can make him wait and then force him to the outside, it's a little more boom bust. He can make some big plays on you, but you're still in a situation where there's times where you create scenarios where if you just give him enough pressure and the route will come open, he doesn't see the route come open because he's too busy trying to work outside. Like, I showed a play on Twitter where Jared Goff, literally whose stats aren't good under pressure. You watch Jared Goff, and this is what I've been talking about for years, is that he can reset after two steps, not invite any more pressure, and by just avoiding one guy with a couple of steps, resetting and firing in rhythm with the passing route and hit that route. Baker Mayfield doesn't do that. Can't do it right now. Hasn't proven he has. What happens is it's all or nothing for him. He's either going to be in the pocket and he can hitch once or twice and throw, or he's rolling outside and freewheeling it. And if, you know, he has lots of opportunities where he can take a couple of steps to avoid the man in the pocket, reset in the pocket, and fire in rhythm, and he misses those opportunities again and again and again. And he ends up inviting more pressure, and it usually ends up being pressure that has a lane that's so easy to an angle so easy to Mayfield that he ends up getting sacked. So this is a big deal. And then in addition to that is that when he's confused by certain reads, or he's pressing, you often see him, and I talked about this a lot, you know, a couple of years ago, I wrote a piece called, you know, something about basically showing Baker Mayfield and saying that accuracy stats don't always give you the context that you're looking for in terms of how good the quarterback is. And with Baker Mayfield, he had very high accuracy numbers, but what you're seeing is some issues with his anticipation. And where he, you know, like the hospital ball to Njoku, or situations last week where he had open guys and he'd wait a couple of beats and then it wouldn't be open anymore. And then he'd end up having to force the ball and end up in a situation where it was a near interception or an incomplete pass on a play that was wide open. So he's looking more and more like the player that I thought he would look like coming out, which is promising, but more of a promising, how would I best put it? A promising starter, but not a franchise player. And I think that's kind of where he's at. This is a player who needs help. He needs help to be really good. So when I hear, Scott McLuhan is a great scout. He's done a great work as a scout. I have lots of respect for like the Frank Gore calls and some of the other players that he's really valued. But, you know, I never really saw the Brett Favre comparison with him. It just, that never jived with me. And when I hear that, I think that the Cleveland Browns bought into the idea that this guy's the next Brett Favre. And then he bought into it by playing off of it, even in the little draft video draft picture he did, that was a reenactment of Favre's call. You know, so he kind of loved that idea too. But they bought into it, and he doesn't have the physical skills of a Brett Favre. He doesn't have the pocket skills of a Brett Favre. I don't think he has the anticipation of a Brett Favre. he just may know offenses a little better on a whiteboard better than what Brett Favre did back in the day. But Brett Favre knew what to do when he was on the field better than what Mayfield shows. So it's, you know, I think he can be good, but I always saw him as more of a Jeff Garcia type of player, which is a limited physical talent. I mean, you don't, I don't think teams are scared of him running the football when they do the read option. When they do the zone read, I just kind of laugh because I'm sitting here thinking, everyone knows it's going to Chubb. And if it isn't, you're probably rolling out the throw. You're not going to be running. And because he's not that quick, he's not that fast. He's slightly above average at best, at best in that. So I just look at this and I think they banked on him being the savior for their team. And they're wrong again, if you ask me. I think they aren't as wrong as they were with Brandon Weeden and the whole list of guys that we can go through. But I think that now they're at a point that they realize that they just can't let him be a one-man band. He's not that good. He's good, but he needs help. He's not a guy that's going to hold it down for your team. You can say, what? We don't need Kevin Zeitler. Well, we don't need a really strong offensive line. Nah, we don't really need that. Baker's going to just take care of all that for us. I mean, I know that's not what they mean, but what they mean to do, but their actions seem to point in that direction.
Right. Well, hey, I will say one piece of good news for you. Now, it's not that they're using Nick Chubb the right way, but this last week played 99% of the snaps. He was the ball carrier on 96% of the team's rushing attempts, and they actually got him more involved, you know, as a receiver out of the backfield. He was running a route on 85% of Baker Mayfield's dropbacks, which, you know, in the previous weeks, he had been at like 50%. He saw 17% of the targets this last week. Not that, you know, making Chubb into a receiving back, you know, is probably not necessarily the best use of his talents, but, you know, he's probably also better at that than what people, you know, give him credit for. So it is interesting to see they are trying. It does look like they're starting to funnel the offense down to say, okay, enough D'Ernest Johnson and Dontrell Hilliard. Chubb can be a bell cow back. Let's get him out there. Now, to your point, if they can just figure out how to actually utilize him versus just being out there in the shotgun running, you know, the read option.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a, you know, there's room for them to get better, and I think they will, and you'll see better numbers from Baker Mayfield if they continue to work towards that. But, you know, this is a very up in the air situation, because I think that this is the type of team and the type of organization that you look at another 3 to 4 games, and if they lose the next 3 to 4 games, we could see a new coach, and we could see and then a new offense with that. And then we're looking at, you know, Marcus Mariota mania that slowly dissipated to, is he going to be our starter? You know, we could see that for Baker Mayfield at some point if this doesn't go well. So, you know, and you know, I'm talking years from now, but I mean, I think that this is, you know, this is certainly one of those situations where Mayfield's getting exposed a little bit, and he has some things to learn. He's capable of doing it. We just have to see whether he will and whether he has the offense and the supporting cast to maximize that. But let's move on with our final team here, which is the Minnesota Vikings, you know, and move on to the fact that, you know, you had Kirk Cousins, who had a strong year in terms of productivity, in terms of just, you know, gross production. But his consistency was just plain gross when you look at, like, from week to week in terms of, you know, his production. And when Stephon Diggs was a player that kind of followed him up and down, and we talked about this summer about how he was a very inconsistent player in terms of his production. But at the same time, they have great weapons around them. They wanted to run the ball. Dalvin Cook has been awesome. And, you know, there's some intriguing weapons in addition to Diggs, Cook, and Thielen. On this team, you know, two of them are rookies, and they're making at least a contributing impact and show some promise in case something happened to, say, Kyle Rudolph or Cook.
Yeah, I mean, I think we start with the positives, which Dalvin Cook is the biggest positive, yeah, you know, for this team. You know, this is a guy that we did talk about this summer, and, you know, I think we were both super excited about what he could look like in this Kubiak style, you know, of rushing offense. You know, a lot of wide zone concepts, you know, a lot of, you know, some inside zone mixed in as well. But I mean, God, I mean, Matt, just some of the plays, like, I don't know that anybody's playing running back better right now, you know, as far as rushing the ball versus Dalvin Cook. I mean, he looks like he's just on another level. It's almost like I picture him running. I'll go back to like when I was like 25, I'd been out of high school for a little bit and I would still go with my buddies every once in a while out to the, you know, the field, and we'd play flag football, which would deteriorate into tackle football. And I remember a bunch of these high schoolers showed up one day, Matt, and I had this guy in a route and I could tell he's an athlete. You know, he's like got his shirt off. He's like ripped. He's fast. You know, I remember he caught the ball and I go to grab his flag and he literally looked at me and he just goes, "Hey, buddy." And he just took off. And that's what I picture Dalvin Cook doing right now to these guys. It's like he gets even with these defenders and he's like, he just finds another gear, or he always has something in his back pocket to gain him extra yards. I mean, and he's not taking big hits. You know, he's getting some big rushing lanes. The Vikings, you know, run blocking is drastically improved, which, you know, we expected with Kubiak, plus the, you know, it's funny what securing your center position, you know, how much that can help you, Matt. Mm-hmm. You know, they definitely invested there in the draft. So, man, Dalvin Cook is the guy that, you know, I get so excited about. And what's amazing, Matt, is, you know, one of your guys, you know, Alexander Mattison looks good too when he's in there. I mean, this last week, you know, Dalvin Cook only had to run the ball 42% of the time because, you know, they won the game by 20, and Madison was out there. He got 32% of the attempts and he looked really good, you know, also didn't look bad in the passing game. But what I think I'm seeing here, you know, as far as, you know, the way they're designing this offense, then we can jump over to, you know, to Kirk Cousins. There's quite a bit to talk about there. Not quite as positive, but what it's come down to, and if we talked about this with the Shanahan offense, it will typically come down to three. And so Adam Thielen, you know, Stephon Diggs, and it's Dalvin Cook in the passing game. So it's not just Cook in the running game. So Matt, he was targeted 20% of the time in week one, 9% in week two, 24% of the time in week three, despite only playing 60% of the snaps because he didn't have to be out there. You know, and then you add Madison, you know, come in and he was running quite a few routes as well. He didn't end up getting targeted, but you know, the designs were there, you know, when you go watch this. And now you've got Irv Smith sprinkling in a little bit. You know, he had 10% of the targets this last week. Kyle Rudolph, you know, which was a guy that I had some hope for because of the way this offense works and the fact that, and I do think this is part of Kirk Cousins' struggle, is he's a guy that likes to work the inside of the field. And now you've got Adam Thielen lining up outside. You know, Adam Thielen's only seeing the slot, you know, Matt, 31% of the time right now. Last year, Adam Thielen lined up in the slot 60-70% of plays, which is the area, you know, he's immediately in the area that Kirk Cousins likes to go to. Think to Jordan Reed, think to Jamison Crowder. And so now Thielen's working outside more. Stephon Diggs doesn't spend much time in the slot. So, and the guy that's playing all the snaps every week is really Kyle Rudolph, but they're not involving him in the game plan. They're keeping him in to block a lot. And I think, and so the trade-off is they're going to Dalvin Cook instead in the passing game, which I can't really argue with. You know, he's a more explosive player at this point in his career. So the offense is definitely funneling, you know, through those three guys. It is nice to see, like, you know, Irv Smith getting a little work. I know he's a guy that in the RSP, you know, this offseason, you know, you were very high on. You know, I know TJ Hockenson was high for you as well, but you gave some major props, you know, to Irv Smith. So I think we can pause there before we jump over to Cousins, because that'll be a whole nother topic. But just, you know, what your thoughts are, you know, as far as this Kubiak scheme and how you see these players coming together in it.
Yeah, I mean, so far it's been great. I mean, Garrett Bradbury, I know that Vikings fans were a little weren't as happy with him in his first game, but I think they're not very savvy to who Grady Jarrett is with the Atlanta Falcons. So that's kind of an issue there. But the Vikings knew well and good. But Bradbury's athletic. It seems to have cohesion on this line. And when you open big creases for a guy like Cook, who has excellent acceleration, and he's always been very good at being able to change direction with accelerate through his changes of direction, which is something that the way that he does it is different than what you would measure in a three cone drill. So, you know, it doesn't quite fit one-to-one in the way that sometimes the metrics folks want to, when they study the combine and weigh heavily on the metrics, it's not going to look that good for him. But there's also another thing that's just, I know that it's not scientific in this sense, but sometimes you look at the science and or the attempt at science, and then sometimes you have to look at common sense. And the common sense is if Dalvin Cook at Florida State is beating NFL caliber athletes and getting angles on them repeatedly, and he was doing this repeatedly in high school, and he tested poorly in high school, and he tested it poorly after college, but you look at the tape, and he's literally, and you can say, show stylistically that he's not, that what he does is different than the actual physical movements of what he'd have to show in a 3-cone drill or a 20 shuttle, then you just throw out the 3-cone drill and the 20 shuttle and just say, have a nice day. I'm going to go with the tape and roll with what you see from that type of player. You know, on the other hand, you know, certainly if he leaned on the same types of movements that you would see at the combine and he performed poorly, then you'd have reason for pause. And I would doubt very seriously that you'd see him also have success on tape against the top NFL caliber athletes that he would have success with. So, you know, he's a fantastic runner. I wouldn't be surprised if you see more and more of Alexander Mattison as the season goes on in order to keep Cook fresh. And also just that their trust in Mattison grows, because I think the design has always been for it to be a committee share on some level. Even Cook said at the beginning of the year after the draft that he was totally cool with it being a committee, he didn't say that directly, but what he said is that this is a league where running back by committee league. And I understand that. And, you know, the goal here is to win and to perform well. And so I think he knew that was coming down the pike with the addition of Mattison. It's just about how well he gets acclimated, and he's acclimated more and more. And I think you'll see a little bit of a raise in that. But overall, that's been good. And you know, Irv Smith in the preseason, what's interesting is you'd see him used a lot as an H-back and kind of more as their slot receiver. And I think he'd be a more effective slot guy down the line if it's this year, maybe not this year, but maybe more next year. But I see him replacing Chad Beebe and being kind of their slot guy, who can also be used in line as a tight end or a wing back or a fullback because he's such a good blocker too. And then you have more usage of 12 personnel that can convert to 11 personnel fairly quickly. So we'll see how
the trends are actually supporting that already, Matt. You know, what we've seen with Irv Smith, you know, his snaps and his routes per, you know, quarterback dropback, you know, are up. So routes per dropback, 36% to 40% to 48%. Whereas, you know, we're seeing BB's, you know, his snaps are actually going down 26% to 25% to 21%. Now, some of that is, you know, due to some of these game scripts, but, you know, to your point, I think that's something that we're seeing them already, you know, dip their toes into those waters, and we're seeing that trend take place.
Yeah, he could be a second half guy then if that goes well. He could end up being one of those second half producers where we're like, wow, he's producing at, you know, starter level clip weekly. So that'll be interesting. But I think a lot of that also depends on how well Kirk Cousins performs and how we feel about, you know, whether this offense is, what they're trying to do here is let's keep Kirk Cousins from being in situations where he has to help us win, you know, win the game in a pivotal moment, because I don't think they trust him on that level.
What's crazy about Cook and Mattison, you know, we haven't seen Mattison score the touchdowns. You know, it's been Cook getting those carries. Cook's got, you know, he had one attempt inside the 5 week 1, nothing week 2. You know, they got down early to the Packers. They ended up making that a 5-point game in the end, and they still lost. But in week 3, you know, he got 2 of those carries. But what Madison's doing on his carries, you know, so Dalvin Cook, you know, one of the things I like to look at, Matt, is how often is a player breaking, you know, a big play. So 15 yards or more as a runner. And 12.3% of the time, Dalvin Cook is gaining over 15 yards on his carry. Madison's at 12%. So, I mean, both guys, now it's on a smaller sample size, but I mean, both guys are, you know, they're creating big plays in the running game. This isn't your typical, you know, yeah, we're averaging 5 yards a carry, and, you know, a lot of it's based on, you know, one of them had a 60-yard run. They're both truly consistently bringing defense. Yes. Yeah. And that when you see that kind of thing, like it's really impressive, and, you know, it puts defenses in a bind, you know, which I think, you know, takes us to Kirk Cousins. And, you know, I don't know, man. I thought that this offense, where do you start? I thought this offense might help Cousins, because typically what we've seen from quarterbacks that have gotten to play in this type of style, even back to a guy that, you know, I don't know how stylistically close he is to Kirk Cousins, but a guy that was kind of a journeyman, but had a few really nice years in this kind of offense, Jake Plummer, right? Yeah. So Kirk Cousins, his average depth of target right now is 5.8. Like he's not pushing the ball, you know, down the field. Now, some of that is they're getting ahead on these teams and they're just trying to basically run the clock. I mean, they've won 2 out of 3 games. They won the first game by 16, you know, whenever they just came out and just, you know, housed the Falcons right away. This last week, they won by 20. So I don't know how much of this is really Cousins versus how much of this is them basically saying, dude, just check it down. Let's just try to keep the chains moving. We're ahead by X. You know, our formula is just don't do anything dumb, you know, and that sounds like something you'd hear Mike Zimmer say, you know, just don't do anything dumb. But the problem, you know, for me is, you know, he's got zero throws to the end zone. You know, he's just not making anything, you know, happen. You know, I mean, he seems, if we have to pick a player that he seems to be the most in tune with, it is still Adam Thielen, you know, who's had 30%, 25%, and 19% of the targets. You know, Thielen even got a rushing touchdown. That was funny this last weekend. But I don't know. I don't know how much we can really put into the data, Matt, because of the way the game scripts have gone. You know, you got three actually all weird games, 2 blowout wins, and 1 game where you were down by 21, you know, in a heartbeat, you know, to the Packers. And, you know, there was that kind of took away some of the threat of the running game, although Dalvin Cook still broke, I think that was the week he broke that 70 yarder when they were already down like 14-0, or maybe it was 21-0. But I just don't know how much, you know, to put into, you know, these statistics, given how weird these games have been.
Yeah. Yeah. And besides the fact that I do, I'll admit that I have a healthy bias against Kirk Cousins. When I see him, I think of that former boyfriend from the Meet the Fockers movie, you know, you know, played by Owen Wilson. Like, yeah. You know, he's if you combine Jake Plummer without his Jake Plummer's risk tolerance with Jake Del Holmes risk tolerance and athletic build, and added a little bit of Owen Wilson's personality in Meet the Fockers, that I kind of see, that's how I see Kirk Cousins as a player. But even so, even just joking around and kind of clowning on Kirk Cousins, I do expect him to have some better weeks ahead. This offense is playing too well overall for him. You know, he's an inconsistent guy, but I think that, you know, you're going to see him have some big games ahead and even have some weeks where he helps his team win. It's just a matter of whether you can, after we've seen enough of him as we have, to really rely on him in the most pivotal moments of games. And I think that they know the answer is no, and they're just hoping that they don't have to deal with it. But if they do, they're just going to take a deep breath and go, we paid a shit ton of money for this guy. And let's take a deep breath and hope something good happens. So, I mean, the weapons are great here. I would love to see there's probably about 15 quarterbacks that I would love to see in this Vikings offense, because they could be a legit Super Bowl contender, with a better quarterback. And I just don't know if Cousins is really that guy. In terms of, you know, again, consistency, ability to know his own weaknesses and his limitations in the pocket when pressure's there, you know, big, you know, decisions that you're supposed to make that aren't stupid at the, you know, at moments where when the pressure comes, you're not thinking clearly, and he ends up making decisions that people, that fans are just like, how could you do that? I think that he just doesn't think clearly. He's one of those guys that's really good when he can be really good at moments, but he doesn't think clearly, and his thinking gets cloudy in the pivotal areas. And then he gets upset with people like me who criticize him, which you don't need to be listening to folks like me.
He's interesting though, because it's, if you look at the data side of it, you know, he's the second most pressured quarterback at 52%, you know, of the time he drops back, he's under pressure. That's second to only Daniel Jones, who's sitting at 60%. But he's only sacked, listen to this, Matt, only sacked 5.6% of the time. And it isn't because he's just throwing a bunch of pick sixes. He's got, you know, three touchdowns and one interception. His quarterback rating under pressure, small sample size, you know, we're only, you know, three games in, but it's solid. You know, it's almost an 89. And under pressure, I mean, sure, you have the elites. You have your Patrick Mahomes. You got your Russell Wilsons. You know, those guys, they're on another plane. But Cousins is in the next tier, you know, of guys. You know, he's not playing terrible under pressure. And that's what's kind of befuddling about it, you know, to me, and why I am just thinking it's got to have something to do with just we haven't seen really the right sample of games here to see what he's truly going to be. You know, the thing that bothers me the most is only a 59% completion percentage when you're only throwing the ball 5.8 yards down the field. Like, that's almost impossible. You know, you should be hitting 70% of your passes easy at that depth of target, you know, maybe 75%, you know, of your passes. So to me, this is one I'm just going to try and say, let it breathe. We probably haven't seen a big enough sample size. He's still learning the offense. You know, he's under pressure quite a bit. So obviously they've got some work to do, you know, with the offensive line, because, you know, if I'm looking at just real quick, you know, his average time to throw, I don't believe it's something where, well, yeah. So right now his average time to throw is 3.11, which is second highest in the league to only Josh Allen. And Kirk Cousins typically is a guy that gets the ball out of his hands much quicker. So maybe he's learning. Maybe he's just not comfortable yet, you know, in the offense my guess.
And when you talk about that, he's making plays under pressure, he's always been willing to stand in under pressure. The problem with him is he's been one of those guys that, like Baker Mayfield, someone fed him the Brett Favre brand water, thinking that he's going to turn into Brett Favre and stand in there and take a massive hit while throwing the ball. And he doesn't have the arm all the time to do that. He got better later in his career in Washington, but you still see moments from him where he tries to make throws that he shouldn't, where the pressure's coming and it's like, just eat it, just eat the ball, man, or just throw it away, because it's that hit's going to alter the throwing motion and you don't have the strength to get that ball there.
It's more like what we see with Case Keenum taking some of these hits and the just not quite enough, and it's a pick.
Yes. So it's the fact that he's had so much time, though, points to what you're saying, which is he's still probably learning the offense. His processing's a little slower. Maybe things will start to get picked. Things will start to pick up. And I agree with you that the recommendation is to let it breathe and, you know, and go from there. But listen, this was a fantastic show. We got to cover four teams that are very intriguing to start the season. You know, we'll have Dwayne back again, probably within the next few weeks, to do the same thing as we get to the near the midpoint of the season and talk about, you know, some other squads and some other individual players. You can follow Dwayne at Dwayne McFarland. You know, we can congratulate him for heading over to Establish the Run and getting a gig there that I'm sure that, you know, you're going to get a chance to see some fantastic content there. You know, he still be doing work for the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And, you know, you can always look forward to that content at MattWaldmanRSP.com. You can follow me at MattWaldmanRSP, at Matt Waldman on Twitter and MattWaldmanRSP.com. And, you know, thanks again for all your great feedback, and may your bold calls come true this weekend.